I'm Al John Goh, podcaster and producer of the Disney List, Skull Rock Podcast, and Dining at Disney. When you're creating content, podcast, webcasting, live streaming, or wanting to step up your video conference calls, you need quality gear and accessories. That's why I use Gator Frameworks in my studio. From professional broadcast boom arms and microphone stands, studio monitor speaker stands, ring light kits, headphone holders, elite furniture studio desks, and acoustic wall treatments, Gator Frameworks has you covered. Gator is the leading brand of cases, stands, and support system solutions for music, pro AV, creative pro, IT, and general utility industries. They have over 1,000 different solutions made from vacuform plastics, rational molded plastics, wood, sewn, and EVA materials. Leveraging their expertise in case design and manufacturing, Gator has a complete OEM division that works with leading companies around the world to engineer and create custom cases for original equipment manufacturers. For more information, visit GatorFrameworks.com. Product provided in exchange for promotional consideration. Welcome back to yet another edition of the Disney List. Hello, I'm Al John, and with me is Kristen. Before we get into our big topic, which is what exactly this week?
We are talking about the top 15 attractions that have no movie or TV show tie-in.
What? You mean there are, is such a thing at Walt Disney World?
Yes, there is.
Nice. Okay. Well, that's going to be a cool list. But we do have for you some awesome Disney travel deals, as Kristen is a earmarked agent and vacation planner. She'll help make your dreams come true on your next Disney or Universal or cruise. And Kristen, what are we talking about this week for travel deals?
We are talking about Walt Disney World. And for those of you that are Disney Plus subscribers, this particular promotion is for you. You can save up to 25% off on rooms at select Disney Resort hotels. And those stays are going to be July 8th through September 30th of this year, 2022. So make sure that you are a subscriber before you request this promotion, because Disney is going to be verifying those bookings to make sure you really are a subscriber.
You must be legit. All right, Kristen. So for people to take advantage of your deals, plus your expertise, not only with your expertise with diningatdisney.com and your podcast and everything you need to know about Disney food, but also all the deals to help save them time and money, because you've got the magic way. What is the email where they can get their free quote and have you book their next Disney vacation?
At themeparksandcruises@gmail.com.
Production of the Sorcerer Radio Network.
An imagination, huh?
Are you guys ready?
Are you ready?
From the Gator Framework Studio in Music City, it's the Disney List. The Disney List. Disney fans Kristen Hetzel and Al John Goh bring you top 10 lists from the Disney parks, films, Star Wars, Marvel, news, travel tips, and more. Now prepare yourself for the Disney List.
Alrighty, thank you so much. You, listening to our show. Thank you for tuning in and subscribing to our show, no matter where it is. Every podcast platform known to man, or Sorcerer Radio, the Sorcerer Radio Network, and srsounds.com. I am Al John Goh, lifelong Disney, Marvel, Star Wars fan, and podcaster, co-host of The Disney List, joined by Kristen. Hello.
Hello, everybody. I am Kristen, Disney foodie and travel expert, particularly traveling to theme parks and cruises and European destinations.
Okay, nice. And European destinations.
Yes.
The Globetrotter. Yes, you are a Globetrotter. And once again, thank you so much for joining the show. We are the first married couple of Disney podcast. We do appreciate you tuning in. Don't forget to please check out the vault of shows there at anchor.fm/the Disney List. And we encourage everybody to subscribe wherever you're at. You can also send us those emails at thedisneylist@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. We've got some news that we're going to talk about, tasty tidbits, if you will, on some Disney and pop culture, including the D23 Expo and Spider-Man with extra fun bonus footage. But before we delve into that, what is our topic for this week? Tease them.
We are talking the top 15 attractions that do not involve a tie-in to a movie or TV show.
there's so much that people have said. They said, man, does everything at Disney have to be tied into a character or TV show or something like that? Or now, a movie or TV show? Does everything have to be? Well, there's quite a bit that isn't, which I'm actually surprised at the number when you count them out. Super surprised.
But it's more surprising about how many really are tight. Like when you go through and you're like, nope, that's tied into something. Oh no, they made a movie about that attraction.
Exactly.
Sometimes the movie came after the attraction.
True. And some of those attractions ended up being tied into movies eventually, like Pirates of the Caribbean, for example, Haunted Mansion.
Yeah, those are what I'm talking about. Or Jungle Cruise.
Or Jungle Cruise. This would have been, if you asked us five years ago, probably not. Or would have been on this list. And then, of course, now, look at it, you know. And I think
Tower of Terror.
Shall we talk about that film with Steve Guttenberg? Crazy film. But anyway, before we get into the top 15, the big top 15 for this week, we do have some awesome, awesome news. The Expo. We're at the precipice of the Expo. This is the first one that we're going to miss in quite some time. Kristen, it's sad, but we have kids now, and it's more difficult than ever. Not only to do this podcast, because we're exhausted all the time.
Herding two babies. Cats.
Herding cats.
It's significantly easier than herding two toddlers.
It's insane. But so we're going to miss out on the D23 Expo this year, but we will have, I believe, Big Bubba B from Dining at Disney, as well as Kedar Corey from Dining at Disney, and SR correspondents are going to be out there reporting back about what's going on with the D23 Expo. Let's take a look at the Expo, because once again, we're just on the precipice of it and on the precipice of 100 years at the Walt Disney Company. Can you believe it? It's almost 100 years old. Now, they're going to be showcasing a ton of stuff, you know, much like Comic-Cons and different things like that. Star Wars Celebration that they just kicked out a couple weeks ago. This particular one is a celebration of all things Disney. They've got Marvel, Star Wars and Lucasfilm, Pixar, Muppets, ABC, TV, Hulu. They've got, and they'll celebrate the theme parks as well, live action TV, movies, everything, including the parks, as I said. And they also have special concerts in there as well. If you've never checked it out, tickets are very limited now because I believe we talked about on Dining at Disney that the 3-day pass is already sold out.
Those and Saturday are sold out. And they were very, very early on because I kind of kept up with that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are kind of upset because historically they've had the parks panel and the movie panel for all live action film slate and maybe some Disney Plus on Saturday. That was like their big announcement day, but they did decide to spread it out this year. So shall we talk a little bit about that?
Sure.
So Friday, September 9th, which is also what I believe to be Disney Plus Day. They're going to be doing some Disney Plus Day announcements maybe Friday and Saturday. But Disney 100 kicks off at the Expo on Friday, September 9th at 10:30 a.m. with the Disney Legends Ceremony featuring Bob Chapek. And the Disney Legends Ceremony will once again honor the visionaries and artists who made a significant contribution to the Disney legacy. So we'll have names of the inductees to be announced in the coming weeks. We love the Disney Legends, do we not?
We do. I wonder if anybody's going to boo him.
Oof. Maybe. Maybe.
If somebody does, if people are booing, I hope somebody can get audio of that for me.
Honestly, we've got a story about Bob Chapek here in a little bit. And, you know, we shed some light on him. It's hard for me now, knowing what I know, to kind of stand up for him. Because you want people to succeed and you want the best for the Disney company, but they just keep on stepping in it.
Well, you have to put the best in place in order to have the best. If you didn't pick the, if you make the mistake and you did not pick the best, well, then no matter what happens, it's not going to be the best it can.
Well, Mr. Iger, not the best. Probably not the best.
Oh, no.
Well, I mean, they went through the process of vetting him. Come to find out he's some piece of work. So anyway, 3:30 guests will be treated to details. I at this point, you know, whatever. We'll also have sneak peeks later that afternoon from Disney Live Action, Pixar and Walt Disney Animation Studios. So a bunch of cast and announcements are going to be there as well, including theatrical and Disney Plus titles. You see, as I said, that's Disney Plus Day. It's going to be really exciting for that. Now, the big day, Saturday, September 10th, we will have the big panels, Marvel Studio and Lucasfilm on Hall D23, the big, nearly 7,000 person seating hall, the big hall, if you will. It starts at 10 a.m., showcasing all that's coming from those brands on Disney Plus, as well as theatrical releases, special series, and all kinds of exclusive footage. You know, they give away so much at these different panels. You know, you can only imagine the kind of posters and swag they're going to give away at Animation, the kind of posters and swag on Saturday they're going to give away for Marvel and Lucasfilm, and all the great superstars are going to be there. I'm looking forward to Don Cheadle because he's the man and he's going to be on Armor Wars, and I can't wait for that to come out because, you know, Don Cheadle is so funny. Looking forward to them. And I'm looking forward to seeing what they're going to do with Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, right?
Yeah.
That's going to be interesting. Also at 3:30 is the Disney branded television stuff. So all the iconic stories and characters from Disney canon, including Doc McStuffins, The Owl House, High School Musical, The Descendants, will play an exclusive showcase of content to include the legacy and their excellence in storytelling. So you're going to see a bunch of stuff from the Disney Channel, Disney Plus, Disney Junior, including the new Disney original series, National Treasure. There you go. American Born Chinese and The Santa Claus. So,
yes,
yeah. Santa Claus. Hopefully we'll see some of this coverage live because we want to see Tim Allen. We love Tim Allen. And then Sunday, September 11th at 10:30, Disney Parks Experience and Products Chairman, the good guy, Josh D'Amaro, will be there and talk about the future of the parks. Every Disney fan will love what's going on as they get a peek behind the scenes of the big dreams of the Disney Imagineer. So we'll see those dreams come to life. And hopefully they don't scale back too much on the future Epcot. We'll have to see. 4:15, we'll also have the Princess Concert featuring Tony nominee Susan Egan, Broadway's original Belle, and Meg in Disney's Hercules. I love that. I love her voice. Also, Academy Award nominee Isabel Mikala, who played Jasmine in Aladdin and The Prom. We'll also have a bunch of different actors and actresses there from the musical realm who's going to be doing a whole bunch of great musical numbers with the band. That'll be very, very nice, including such classics as Part of Your World, Let It Go, A Whole New World, Colors of the Wind, and Almost There. All these great songs. So once again, get your tickets while you can for whatever day you can. And, you know, hopefully Bubba and Kat will have the press passes and they'll get things going. So good for that.
I will tell you, one of the coolest uses of Let It Go is in Encanto when Bruno sings the part and says, let it rain, let it snow, let it go. I was like, that's the best.
Yeah, you know, that was all tongue in cheek. So good stuff there. Hey, you know, talking about Bob Chapek, did you know that this past week he stunned the world by letting go? You see what I did there? Of a very influential person in Peter Rice, who was the head or the chairman of entertainment and programming. Chapek made another massive mistake, said the Hollywood Reporter. The market changed and dropped 4% as the news became public of him letting Peter Rice go. Apparently, this is the scuttlebutt from what I hear, rumor mill, if you will, that Peter Rice was being primed to take over for Bob Chapek because his contract, Bob Chapek's contract, expires in February. And they said, ooh, I'm going to let you go, boop, because you are a threat to my position. That's what they're saying. And it was shocking.
Yeah,
the world.
Well, maybe if he wasn't so crappy, then he wouldn't have to worry and be threatened by somebody else who could do the job better than him.
Aye, aye, aye. Well, I tell you what is doing great is Disney Plus. We've been watching The Quest recently, and that's a very interesting kids type of dramatic cosplay / reality show. Interesting enough, we've also seen Miss Marvel on Disney Plus. We saw the first episode. What's up with that? Do you like it?
It looks interesting. We'll have to see as it plays out because, you know, I don't really know anything about this character. So.
It's cool. I think I like Miss Marvel a lot. And
I do think she's, it's a great way to introduce those who are preteens and teens who maybe haven't gotten into Marvel to get into the show.
I like it. Good stuff. Well, we look forward to seeing more of Ms. Marvel in the weeks to come, as well as Star Wars Obi-Wan, which you love tremendously. You love Ewan McGregor. What did you think of this last week's episode? No spoilers.
Very good.
Very good. Nice. Hey, so Marvel has got a brand new director coming aboard this Thunderbolts project. Have you heard about the Thunderbolts?
I've heard about them, but I don't know anything about them.
Okay, so you know Julia Louis-Dreyfus from Seinfeld, right? Her character,
yes,
who from Falcon and Winter Soldier, yes, is getting ready to recruit a bunch of anti-heroes, like like Yelena Belova from Black Widow. That's not a spoiler. We already know about that. You know, she was in Hawkeye. And then you also have her recruiting U.S. agent at the end of Captain America and the Winter Soldier series with Falcon and Winter Soldier, I should say.
She just feels like she's
like the evil Nick Fury.
You know what I was just going to say? It seems like she's recruiting like people that can be villain type kind of people.
Bing, bing, bing,
so
bing.
So I'm guessing this is... Let me guess. This is Marvel's version of Suicide Squad.
Yeah, exactly.
There we go.
You got it. I was waiting. For you to get it.
It took a minute.
Yeah, this morally ambiguous team called the Thunderbolts. And it looks like they've scored a brand new director in Jake Shearer. And Jake has been known to direct such films as Robot and Frank, episodes of Jim Carrey's Kidding, and Dave and Minx. So very cool stuff as well. They also, Marvel Studios also has enlisted the help of Eric to pen the script as well. So Eric Pearson is known for his work in Black Widow and Thor Ragnarok. So very cool indeed. Very neat. And once again, they're, as they said here, you said it just like Hollywood Reporter said, they're akin to Suicide Squad from DC.
I didn't read that, so.
I know you didn't read. You didn't read it, but it's very cool indeed. So I like the Thunderbolts, and you'll get to see them soon. Speaking of movies and Marvel, they are making waves again. Sony and Marvel Studios teaming up to re-release a new version of Spider-Man: No Way Home, quote, the more fun stuff version, which is going to be hitting theaters in September. We love Spider-Man: No Way Home, do we not?
Yes, we do.
It's like Peter. Spider-Man, 1, 2, 3, Spider-Man. Tom Holland, Andrew Garfield, and Tobey Maguire. No surprise, y'all. This is out there. It's not a spoiler, but there are three Spider-Men from the multiverse teaming up to take on all these multiversal bad guys. And it looks like they will have more fun stuff, more added footage that's going to be happening. Added extended scenes of Spidey in the celebration for the character's 60th anniversary. Whoa, that's super cool. Tickets go on sale.
That is the oldest teenager ever.
I know. Spider-Man never grows up. Tickets will go on sale Tuesday, August 9th for this extra fun stuff version of Spider-Man: No Way Home. I believe I read somewhere that there's going to be anywhere from 15 to 20 minutes worth of extra footage, something like that. That's pretty significant. And I think this will be a great way. I hope that they bring this out into the drive-in so we can take the kiddos and we can all see it in September. Don't you think?
Yeah.
Be a good little anniversary gift, right?
They'd like it since they like Spider-Man.
They do like Spider-Man. I've been making sure that they know that there's more to life than just Mickey Mouse. So here we go.
Well, look, I've been trying to, but you know. Every day. I want to see Mickey.
Mickey, I want Mickey.
Donald, Goofy, Daisy.
So, in Disney Plus news, Sarah Chaudhry and Anders Holm joined the musical comedy The Muppets Mayhem for Disney Plus. Have you heard about this series? We talked about it maybe. But they have the Electric Mayhem Band is going to be featured in their brand new Disney Plus TV show. And we have Andreas Holm from Workaholics and Inventing Anna, as well as Sandra Chaudhry from the Mysterious Benedict Society and Holly Hobby joining this group. Once again, the comedy series follows the Electric Mayhem Band, Dr. Teeth on vocals and keyboard, Animal on the drums, of course, Floyd Pepper on vocals and bass, Janice on her lead guitar, Les Paul, Gibson Les Paul, and Zoot on saxophone and Lips on trumpet, an epic music-filled journey to record their first ever studio album. Gosh, can you believe it? after all this time, their first ever studio album, with the help of young, driven music executives Nora Gibbs and old school Muppet Band, comes face to face with the current day music scene, and they're trying to go platinum. Guys, I thought you already made it. I thought you already made it. But I'm looking forward to checking out The Muppets Mayhem on Disney Plus later this year, or next year, early next year. Should be neat. All right. Now, that's the end of the news. Now it is time. It is time for awesome top 10 stuff, right?
Actually, right? Top 15.
Top 15. All right. It's top 15 stuff.
Yes.
What exactly is a topic for this top 15?
We are discussing the attractions that do not have either a movie or a TV show tie-in. And that includes movies, attractions that had a movie made about them. The attraction is first. And it includes, of course, the attractions that were created because of a movie.
Once again, this does not include attractions that finally ended up getting a movie tie-in, like Jungle Cruise or...
That's what I just said.
Yeah, all that. Yeah, I know you said that, but
okay.
I'm just kind of reiterating that.
Yes.
Because a lot of people, because we could have said, hey, these are just original IPs, but, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean is an original intellectual property, and they have that tie-in, so.
Yes, like I said, the attraction was started first, and then a movie was made about it. So, of course, that's Haunted Mansion, Tower of Terror, Pirates of the Caribbean, Jungle Cruise, or ones that got, you know, were made because of a movie, so.
It's a pretty expansive list. I'm kind of impressed for Walt Disney World that there are 15 that we can speak of off the bat. Did we miss anything? Let us know at the end of the show. All right. So let's first start off with this one at number 15 in no particular order, I may add. So what do we have at number 15?
Number 15 is Astro Orbiter at Magic Kingdom.
Yay. It's a kiddie ride. I like this ride a lot just because it gives you a tremendous view of the castle, really way up high. It's pretty neat at Walt Disney World, and not so cool at Disneyland because it's really close to the ground and it's kind of in a weird, awkward place.
It's
in the middle of the entrance.
It's cool to ride Astro Orbiter at night.
Yes, especially during fireworks.
It doesn't operate during fireworks, does it?
I think we saw it once when it was operating during fireworks.
For some reason, I was thinking it wasn't operating during fireworks.
Mm-hmm. But
I don't know.
It is a rocket spinning attraction featured at 5 Disneyland style parks, including, of course, Walt Disney World, except for Tokyo Disneyland, right? Each one has a different name. This is very much like, the Magic Carpet Ride or Dumbo. It's just a little bit, just slightly different. But I really dig it. Attraction opened in November 28th of 1974, called the Star Jets. And then it was changed April 30th of 1994 to the Astro Orbiter. Did you know that?
I did not.
How about that? So
I'm pretty sure I never rode it until it was the Astro Orbiter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep. It's cool. I mean, what else can you say about it other than the fact that it is kind
Dumbo
of like,
ride.
A, you know, it's a spinner ride. You move up and down and you move, you know, in a circle. Yay. Okay.
It's so Dumbo. It's a kid ride. Yeah. If you can't ride it, you can ride Dumbo or Aladdin's carpet ride.
Now, the different names of this attraction, right? So at Tokyo Disneyland, they call it Star Jets. And at Disneyland Paris, they call it the Orbitron. And at Disneyland, of course, also the Astro Orbiter. And then in Hong Kong, they call it the Orbitron. In Shanghai Disneyland, they call it Jetpacks. And there you have it.
Hmm.
There you have it.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Not too bad. At number 14,
Kingdom.
Still at Magic Kingdom. Yeah, I think you tried grouping these by park, which is cool.
I did because I was thinking park by park.
Is you have Space Mountain.
Yes.
I love Space Mountain. So this space-themed roller coaster located 5 of the 6 Disneyland-style parks, although 5 of the variations of the attraction are different in nature, they have a similar conical exterior that is a trademark for the park. The original Space Mountain opened in 1975 in Walt Disney World. There are 2 tracks, the Alpha and the Omega, which passengers can choose from. Other versions of the attraction were built at all the other Disney parks except for Shanghai Disneyland. So there you have it. So what is it about Space Mountain? You love Space Mountain, don't you?
I do like Space Mountain, especially if I'm in the front seat. It's not as much fun for me if I'm in any other seat because you can feel where the attraction is going, which if you're in the very first seat, you can't see anything. So you don't know really where you are until it moves.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Space Mountain concept is a descendant of the first mountain attraction, the Matterhorn bobsleds Matterhorn bobsleds at Disneyland, which opened in 1959. And because of its success, they decided to throw this one in Walt Disney World. And I really dig this dark ride kind of interior. You don't know what's around the bend. There's a lot of just kind of surprises. And you would think that this thrill ride is super fast, but it really isn't really that fast at all, apparently. So I think it's just the fact that you just...
That's why I have to be in the front seat for it to be...
Yes.
Good.
Initially, the concept was to have four separate tracks, but the technology at the time with the amount of space provided made it impossible. So imagine four tracks running around.
I wish they'd make it a little bit smoother, though.
Yeah, we thought they would be doing that, but nonetheless, they didn't. But anyway, Card Walker, the CEO of Walt Disney Productions, convinced RCA chairman Robert Sarnoff to sponsor the attraction. And that's where a lot of that stuff, especially in the post show where you're riding the conveyor belt out.
The little doggy.
Yeah, with a little doggy. Yep. That we talked about before, which is kind of cool, kind of happened. So yeah, very cool indeed. I definitely love Space Mountain. And 13.
This I think is my favorite mountain. Mm-hmm. Big Thunder Mountain.
Mm-hmm. It's a mine train located in Magic Kingdom. They also have clones of it at Tokyo Disneyland that I've rode, which is awesome. And in Disneyland Paris, they also have it in Tokyo as well. It's, of course, Big Thunder Mountain. The name of the ride is also the fictional rail line for the roller coaster, right? So here's a story. In the late 1800s, gold was discovered on Big Thunder Mountain in the American Southwest. And overnight, a mining town became a living and thriving one. Right. And mining was prosperous. An extended line of mine trains was set up to transport the ore to the settlers. But unknown to them, the mountain was a sacred spot to local natives and it was cursed.
Oh, no.
Before the settlers, a desecration of the mountain caused a great tragedy, which, depending on the park, is usually depicted to be an earthquake of some kind. Of course, in Disneyland, Tokyo, it is a tsunami, a flash flood over there in Walt Disney World, which befell the mines in town, and the town got abandoned. Sometimes later, the locomotives were found to be racing across the mountain on their own without an engineer or crew. Big Thunder Mountain Railroad was founded in the old mining camp to allow wanderers to take rides on the possessed trains. Mm-hmm. The wildest ride in the wilderness, if you will.
I will say I do like the additional things that they added into the one in Disneyland that we don't have. And I really hope they make those changes to the Walt Disney World one because it makes it more fun.
Mm-hmm. I like it. Some of the interactive elements are nice where you can, blow stuff up and hit the geysers and hit smoke and all those really cool things with the TNT and stuff that you can see. But really going up the mountain, if you will, and seeing the mountain erupt with all the effects in Disneyland were super cool. Stuff that they pretty much had used the same kind of projection and light technology that they used in the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, which is super neat as well. But that is not a thrill ride. You should just put it in the Walt Disney World version too.
Yes.
Big Thunder Mountain Railroad was designed by our buddy, Imagineer Tony Baxter, and the ride engineer, Bill Watkins. The concept came from Baxter's work on fellow Imagineer Mark Davis's concept for the Western River Expedition, a Western-themed pavilion in the Magic Kingdom to look like an enormous plateau that had a lot of rides, including this runaway mine train roller coaster. However, because the pavilion as a whole was deemed too expensive in light of the construction in 1973 and the opening of Pirates of the Caribbean, Baxter proposed serving the mine train and its building as a separate attraction. And there you go.
I like it.
It's wonderful. I like it a lot. I love the theming of it. It's great that you can ride it in the day and at night and have two different experiences.
Are you stealing from me?
Is that what you're going to say?
That's what I always say.
Well, there you go. I've been hanging around you too long.
Clearly.
This is one of my most restful attractions. I say that with a lot of love. It is Walt Disney's Carousel of Progress. What do you love about the Carousel of Progress?
Other than the air conditioning?
Yeah.
I do really like that you get to see the different the different decades. And now that we are more than 100 years past where the attraction starts in technology, I think it's cool to see those kitchens and how they evolved. I will say the only thing I don't like is the fact that we're still stuck in 1990s in the end scene. And it, I think Christmas needs to move forward and we need to like pass that and let's jump into where we are today.
I see. I see what you want to do there. That's been a criticism, you know.
I don't want them to change the old scenes. I like those. Like, don't change those. Just make the last one, whatever is current.
Yeah, they need to make it great grandma, great, great, great grandma, grandpa, whatever. Hey, the Carousel of Progress holds the record as the longest running stage show in the history of American theater. It is one of the oldest attractions in Walt Disney World, too. It's the oldest attraction at the Walt Disney World to have been touched by Walt Disney.
You know what I want to know? Yes. What is the oldest attraction running in the world?
The oldest attraction?
Yeah.
Got to be some kind of Coney Island.
No. There's the theme park that these were, Walt Disney World and Disneyland were based off is Trivoli, I believe is the name of it. And it's in Copenhagen.
Oh,
it is, I believe, the oldest theme park in the world.
Interesting.
It's very cool. I've been there.
Mm.
I liked it.
Well, of course, you know that the Carousel, Walt Disney's Carousel of Progress, the official name, is a rotating audio animatronic stage, which is located in Tomorrowland. And as you mentioned, Kristen, this is steeped in nostalgia, futurism, and the attraction's premise based on the joys of living through the advent of electricity and other technological advances during the 20th century. A typical American family tries to keep up with the times, and it's been updated 5 times in 1967, 1975, 1981, 1985, and 1993. I think you're right. It probably needs to be updated.
I have only seen 2 versions of that ending.
Yeah.
And it was the one before it changed to in 1993.
There you go.
And that's only because I had not visited the theme park until 91.
There you go. There you go. There have also been a couple different songs. They're written by the Sherman Brothers, Disney's award-winning songwriting team. So, yeah, we like the Carousel of Progress. It's fun. I like to see the story and the progress from generation to generation. Very nice indeed. I love seeing the little doggy. The doggy's great.
I love that each scene is a different holiday.
Yes. Yes. That is a great kind of piece of storytelling. The 4 seasons, 4 different generations as electricity and technology grows and advances. It is the Carousel of Progress, of course. So here you go. Very neat indeed. And we're hopefully, you know, they'll pay attention and maybe update the show, which would be amazing if they did. So once again, Walt Disney's Carousel of Progress, it's a winner. Well, how about this? Another attraction that isn't tied into any film or TV show is Walt Disney's Enchanted Tiki Room at Walt Disney World. Now, we love this attraction in all its various forms throughout the year, whether it's the Enchanted Tiki Room or the Enchanted Tiki Room under new management, which was around from 1998 to 2011. And I love the music. It's a lot of fun. The animatronics, of course, are always fun. And the storytelling's great. But, Kristen?
I like the under new management.
You're one of the few.
I know. But this is why. Uh-huh. In that attraction, you had the voices of Jerry Orbach. You had... Oh my gosh, my mind just went blank. He was on news radio. Phil Hartman.
Yes.
As well as Gilbert Godfrey. And all 3 are no longer with us.
That is so sad. That is so sad. You can still listen to that track on Sorcerer Radio. That's for sure. If you have the CD or the old, old tracks. Boy, I'm dating myself now. But this is a great, great attraction. Of course, the original opened at Disneyland June 23rd of 1963 and was the first to feature audio animatronics. That is groundbreaking. Wet Enterprises patented that invention, and the attraction was sponsored by United Airlines for the first 12 years. And in 1976, it went over to Hawaii's Dole Food Company, where you can find the Dole Whip to this very day. And a direct copy, virtual identical, called Tropical Serenade was installed at Walt Disney World's Magic Kingdom when it opened in 1971, accompanied by a new pre-show. Tropical Serenade was replaced in 1998 by Enchanted Tiki Room under new management, featuring, of course, as you said, Iago and Zazu from Aladdin and The Lion King, respectively. And on January 2011, a small fire broke out in the attic of the attraction. That's really weird, don't you think?
Gosh, it's been that long since that fire happened.
Yeah. The Iago audio animatronic figure was severely damaged in the blaze, and it was announced at Disney, the D23 Destination D Walt Disney World 40th Anniversary Conference. Can you imagine? That is a mouthful. Mm-hmm. That the attraction would be refurbished and returned to the original show format. The attraction reopened August 15th of 2011 as Walt Disney's Enchanted Tiki Room and was reinstated as a slightly edited version of the Disneyland original show. So was it kismet that this happened? Was it fate? Was it destiny?
Maybe somebody set Iago on fire. They were tired of him talking back.
Yeah. Anyway, there is a cast of over 150 talking, singing animatronic birds, flowers, and the aforementioned tiki drummers, tiki totem poles that feature all the tunes. Of course, the title track, the Tiki 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 Room, penned by the Sherman Brothers. And Let's All Sing Like the Birdies Sing. My mom used to sing that song to me. And then the Hawaiian War Chant as well. So pretty neat stuff indeed. Here's one of our favorite attractions, Kristen.
Test Track.
Yay.
Over at Epcot, we have changed parks, people.
We've changed parks. So we're back. We're now at Epcot. And Test Track in its current state is fun. You get to check out a bunch of concept cars and then build one for yourself. Go through all the testing procedures that General Motors has to evaluate its concept cars, whether it's a muscle car or whether it's eco-friendly. You definitely get a chance to test out all of the things you put into your car. And then, of course, you have a high-speed drive throughout the exterior of the track, the attraction. So it opened to the public softly, soft open. December 19th of 1998, after a long delay prevented its opening because of the various changes in design, etc., the attraction officially opened March 17th of 1999 and replaced the World of Motion ride, which closed 3 years earlier. So,
wasn't that part of the millennial celebration?
I believe so. I believe so. And then, of course, you go through the GM testing facility, which was originally how it went through. And you got to see all how the automobile process and testing were conducted with the crash test dummies. The exterior, when you leave the building, has a top speed of 64.9 miles per hour, making it the fastest Disney theme park attraction ever built. Cool, right? Pretty cool. And then it closed for refurbishment April 15th of 2012 and reopened December 6th of 2012, sponsored by Chevy. Of course, now they have the brand new Sim car and the Sim track. So you have this virtual testing that goes on. So I don't know, which version do you like, the kind of simulated Tron version of Test Track or the original version with the crash test dummies?
I liked the original version, but it definitely needed some love put into it. So I see why they changed it to what they did. Mm. And this one's a little bit simpler. It doesn't have as many different things going on in the attraction to go wrong.
There you go.
So I can see why they may have done it that way.
This is a 5 minute ride too, gang. A 5 minute ride. I wonder if the kids are going to be able to ride this. Are they going to be tall enough to ride?
No.
They won't?
No.
Oh, poor babies. I guess they're going to have to do a ride share.
That's why under age three, they don't charge for ticket because you are too short.
Too short to ride.
You're too short to ride.
We're going to have to put them in like a McGruff coat and then they'll be standing on each other to get into the ride. Just joking.
That's crazy.
Hey, speaking of a ride that our kids won't be able to enjoy.
That's what parent swap is for.
Parent swap. I said ride swap. Speaking of another attraction.
Maybe it's called Ride Swap. I don't know.
Parent Swap.
I'm tired.
It's like a TV show, Parent Swap.
Whatever.
It's like you're swapping. It's Wife Swap. It's Wife Swap, right? Right. Wife Swap. Oops. Another attraction our kiddos won't be able to ride is this one. In any incarnation, whether it's a safe, not so spinny ride version or the spinnier ride version. That you have to opt out of because you're too chicken to ride it, or you can't. It's Mission Space. Okay, it's a space-themed exploration pavilion and motion simulator attraction, and this is the Mission to Mars. I like Gary Sinise as the old host of this because it's go time. It is Gary Sinise, and we love Gary Sinise here on the show. and we miss Gary Sinise. But nonetheless, the ride is still pretty awesome. We like it. We like the update version of it. It's very nice. What else can we say? You're on a mission to Mars. And
I got to be the one to take Connor, my, don't know how you put it, best friend's son. Mm-hmm. He's kind of like a nephew to us. But I got to be the one to take him on the more intense version because she wouldn't do it. And so I've already experienced the fear of sitting there and a kid freaking out next to you. Luckily, he did not at all. I looked at him and was like, you okay? This is awesome. I was like, okay, yes. He's like, let's do it again. I was like, no, we got to go find your mom.
Can you imagine being in that cockpit and then someone, you know, because the pre-show has you getting ready. This is the type of stuff in astronaut training you're going to do for the flight simulator, right? I mean, the ISTC Space Training Center, International Space Training Center, Mission to Mars. Gary Sinise is getting you going, right? And of course, now they have someone else that's doing it, but they almost scare you to death in the pre-show. It's like, if you're afraid of spinning, you know, if you're motion sensitive, you can opt out of this ride and then go tinker around in the training laboratory, advanced training lab. It's like, yeah, go ahead. You know, but can you imagine being in that little cockpit with all the buttons and everything? And then someone has a sick bag and they try to reach for it and they didn't reach for it and it just gets everywhere. That'd be disgusting. And then
no,
all the
but
little,
we've gone in there after that's happened. Like where we went to get in, they're like, oh, you're going to have to wait. We need to clean the machine. Oh,
can you imagine? Because there's all the little greeblies and little joysticks and buttons and everything that could possibly get that's messed up. It's like, I feel like taking a wipe in there now, like a bacterial wipe and just wiping everything down. Because I'm sitting there, I love touching the buttons and seeing them flicker and make little noises and everything. And I'm sorry, I've derailed the show. This is disgusting. Just so you know, this attraction is a multiple arm centrifuge ride, which spins around. It's a 4-minute mission, if you will. Fans blow gently to get the riders kind of feel at ease to avoid motion sickness, and a magnified display in the front simulates the window to space with high-resolution computer-generated imagery. There are 4 separate centrifuges, each with 10 capsules holding 4 riders. The attraction exposes riders up to 2.5 Gs, more than twice the force of gravity as the Earth's surface, multiplying the rider's weight by 2.5. A few months after the ride's opening, motion sickness bags were added in each of the riders within easy reach.
I have never had to use a bag on an attraction. I've never gotten sick from riding something. Uh-huh. I've been sick and like not felt well riding an attraction, but I've never gotten sick from an attraction. Only food poisoning.
So there are two, because of this, there is a height requirement. You have to be 44 inches. You can do the orange testing or the green, the orange testing.
Orange
more intense and the green less intense, right?
They should just call it the wimpy people version.
Several people have been taken.
That's the one my mom rides.
Several people have been taken to local hospitals for chest pain and nausea after riding. Most who complained of these symptoms were over 55, and 2 of the people died after completing the ride. Although due to pre-existing conditions, 1, a 4-year-old boy with an undiagnosed heart condition, and the other, a 49-year-old woman from a stroke due to high blood pressure. Wow. That's real. That's real, y'all.
That's why they have all those. I mean, you wouldn't have been able to tell that with the 4-year-old. But with other people, you know if you have medical conditions, and that's why they put those warnings. So you really have to know, like, can you really handle something if you're going to attempt that? Because, yeah.
All right, here we are.
On to fun.
On to fun. This is Journey into Imagination with Figment.
The attraction where people don't die. So this is, as you said, Journey into Imagination with Figment. I miss the original version. That was the best. But this still has Figment. So therefore, it's okay.
I like this attraction a lot because it has a lot of different Easter eggs for all of the Disney scientists, which are in there. Of course, it's hosted by Dr. Nigel Channing, Eric Idle, which is great. Eric Idle, of course, from Monty Python, fame, and of course, Figment of Swell. And this is great. I mean, this is a tour tram takes you through the scientific area of the, you know, the pavilion, which is great. The original attraction was created by Tony Baxter. Of course, it has since then changed to Journey into Imagination with Figment. So it opened back up in 1983. And then it was Journey into Your Imagination from 1991. And then 2002, it's been...
Oh, that's the one I was on, the Journey into Your Imagination.
Yeah, there you go.
I loved that one.
Yep. And then Journey into Imagination with Figment.
Originally it not have Figment, enough Figment, so therefore they added him in, which is why it's with Figment?
Yes, and the Journey into Your Imagination from 1991 to 2001, the reception to that particular attraction was largely negative because Figment's appearances were reduced to cameos in Q movies instead. So they reintegrated him into the
ride. That doesn't make sense because I remember him being in the attraction when I saw it.
Well, he was there, but it wasn't very good. Like I said, it was Figment's appearances and the experience were reduced to cameos and in the Q movies. So
him being in the attraction more than he is even now.
And it says in a constellation in the Connection Lab and the End of Your Ride where he's only heard but is shooed off by Dr. Channing. So.
Oh, no, that's 1999, right?
1999 to 2001.
Okay, so it was the one before that I had been on. Yes, not that one.
Really? When did you go?
My first time was in 91.
Well, then you would have seen... Okay, 91. Okay, 91. Yes. Gotcha. Okay, so you did remember that. Okay.
Yeah. Because I was going to say, no, I remember Figment being in that a lot.
Ah.
Okay. In the Dreamfinder.
Oh, there you go. I think some of my favorite ones, once again, are the references to the Disney films. So in this latest iteration of Journey into Imagination, they do have the Imagination Institute, which is connected to Medfield College, where it's the setting of several live-action Disney films, right? So you've got the offices of Professor Brignard, which is from The Absent-Minded Professor. And then they also have Wayne Szalinski, Rick Moranis from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids trilogy is there as a professor. You also have Robin Williams, you know, which is there as well.
Flubber,
right?
Yes.
Yes.
From Flubber.
Yep. And Dean Higgins, Joe Flynn's role in the Dexter Riley films, which includes different references to the computer wore tennis shoes in the front room. So just pretty cool stuff, you know. So I love the fact that, you know, Professor Brignard's there, you know, with, you know, Flubber. I love Flubber. It's good stuff. So I like all those little references in there. All right, let's move on.
Nods. They're like nods.
They're the next one. Yes, knots.
Is Soarin'.
Yay.
So which Soarin' did you like better? Soarin' over California or Soarin' over the world?
Soarin' over California.
I like that the new one has places that I've been to in the world, except it bothers me that they're distorted. Like the Eiffel Tower is not
distorted.
He's like it's all bent and stuff.
Yeah, you would have thought they would have adjusted the map to match the projection. Either way, the Eiffel Tower will still be kind of bent because no matter where you're going to see it, you don't have a head-on necessarily sign, viewing of the Eiffel Tower. It's always going to be distorted. But anyway, Soarin', also known as Soarin' Around the World or Soaring Over the Horizon and Soaring Fantastic Flight, is a flight simulator. You can find it in California Adventure, in Epcot, Disney's California Adventure, Epcot, Shanghai Disneyland, and Tokyo DisneySea. And it is a mechanical lift system with a projection on a 80-foot concave 180-degree dome screen with artificial sense to simulate hang gliding over different places around the world. And, Soarin' over the world is not bad. It's good. I like it, once again, because it's very relaxing. You know, unless, of course, you're afraid of heights, you'll probably white knuckle it.
Oh, yes.
Did your mom ever ride Soarin'?
Oh, yes.
Did she white knuckle it?
Oh, yeah. She kept grabbing my arm.
She thought she was going to fall off. She thought she was going to fall off.
I'm like, you're not going to fall. You're fine. I don't like this. I'm like, the whole time, I'm like, just okay. You're okay.
Yeah, it's a really cool ride for sure. we could go into a lot of in depth about all this, but I do like the Smellitzer that pumps the different scents in there. But one of the most important things that I love about this is the music. It's just magnificent. Yes, Kristen, we're gonna say yes.
I'm trying to look at the list of the places that it hits.
Oh,
like the places that you view.
Oh,
is that on there?
Yeah. So here are the for Soarin' Over the World.
Yeah, I just wanted to look.
Okay, well, here you go. You can go ahead and tell everybody.
I can't read all those from here.
Okay, so you've got the Matterhorn in Switzerland.
I wasn't planning on reading all of them. I just wanted to look at the list.
Okay, we're already opening it up. So here you go. Matterhorn in Switzerland and Italy. You've got Greenland is in there. The Sydney Harbor in Australia. The Neuschwanstein Castle in Germany, Bavaria.
Yeah.
Kilimanjaro National Park in Tanzania. The Great Wall of China. The Great Pyramids of Egypt, the Taj Mahal in India, the West and East Mitten Boots in Arizona. Did I say that right? And the Lau Islands of Fiji.
That always looks pretty.
The Iguazu Falls in Brazil and Argentina, the Eiffel Tower of Paris and Shanghai Disneyland, California. The rest are different depending on the end. Depends on the park that you're at. But of course, in the Epcot version, you end up in Epcot. Yay.
However, in Disney California Adventures version, you end up in Disneyland, not in DCA.
Mm.
That's always seemed weird to me.
Yes. So the music is wonderful. So Soarin' Around the World has gotten a new score by someone I interviewed on Skull Rock Podcast, Bruce Broughton. And he based it on Jerry Goldsmith's original score. Of course, Jerry Goldsmith is known to do Star Trek, the motion picture, and a lot of different music. Just an award-winning musician. Of course, Bruce Broughton is known for his music on The Orville. Go figure. So anyway, little tie-in there for Star Trek for you geeks.
Oh, and this one's your favorite attraction.
No, this is one of my favorites for sure. Once again, we're talking about 15 of the attractions at Walt Disney World that don't have a tie-in to TV or film. And this one is Living with the Land, if you will. It's a boat attraction, dark ride located in the greenhouse of the Land Pavilion at Epcot. It is great. Features all the agriculture, new technologies that make agriculture more efficient, sustainable, and environmentally friendly. This, of course, hasn't been updated in a long time.
I think you like it because you know somebody who is one of the kids that has the little quotes up on the wall.
I don't think that's them. I really don't think that's them. I keep on thinking that, but it's not.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I think so. I keep on telling myself they may have misspelled her name, but no, I don't think it's her. So
there's another person with the same name in the same city?
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. But anyway, I love it because it takes you backstage to see all the different, the fish and the different plants and the fruits and vegetables. So you've got the tropical greenhouse, the aquacell for fish farming. You've got the temperate greenhouse, which is the desert, formerly the desert greenhouse, where the melons and all kinds of turnips and stuff are there. You also have the string greenhouse, was recognized by the Guinness World Records as to have the world's largest productive tomato plant in the world.
What?
Yeah, it's crazy, right?
Yeah.
And then the creative greenhouse, where they have a bunch of nutrients in these A-frames that grow via aeroponics. And additionally, Living with the Lab also has a biotech lab and integrated pest management lab where they talk about ladybugs being natural pesticides, right? Getting rid of the little buggers that eat plants.
The thing, though, is if you're thinking about it, your house, like, I'm going to go out and I'm going to get ladybugs to use on my plants. How do you keep your ladybugs from flying away?
I have no idea.
See, that's a problem with ladybugs.
I guess.
Okay.
The next thing on our top 15 is Spaceship Earth. And Spaceship Earth is great.
And the smell of Rome burning.
The smell of Rome burning, yes. So there we have everything about Spaceship Earth, which is all about our voyage as Earth, as a spaceship. The worldview, encourage everyone on Earth to act as a harmonious crew, working toward the greater good. Communication throughout time, if you will.
I like the Gutenberg printing press.
Is that right?
Yes. I have something from the actual Gutenberg printing press that I made.
Oh. Do you?
So that, Yes, I do.
Is that your favorite? Is that
that's
your favorite? Why,
that's my favorite scene, that's probably why. One of them, yes.
It's a dark ride attraction at Epcot. Of course, it houses the structure and symbolic structure of Epcot since the park opened in 1982. Wow. Can you imagine 50 years ago? It's crazy.
I'll tell you, that machine's not easy to use.
So this 15-minute ride takes guests on a time machine-themed experience demonstrating the advancements of human technology and communication to help create the future one step at a time. So this has got the Omnimover type vehicles that the Haunted Mansion has, very similar to that. And this geodesic sphere, the passengers are taken through it, depicting all kinds of great scenes and breakthroughs through communication throughout history. So pretty cool stuff. You've got cave paintings, the use of hieroglyphics, the invention of the alphabet. Thank you, Phoenicians. You've got the printing press. And then modern communication advancements through the internet and telecommunication and mass communication.
Wasn't it Jeff for the longest time said Venetians thought it was Venice?
No, surely not. Since 19-
No, I think so.
Surely not. Surely not. Hooked on Venetians worked for me. No, it's Hooked on Phonics from the Phoenicians. Since 1982, the ride has been updated three times in 1986, 1994, and 2008. On February 2020, Disney Parks blog announced that Spaceship Earth will be closing for refurbishment. And then...
Oh my gosh. Stop.
Podcaster and producer of the Disney List, Skull Rock Podcast, and Dining at Disney.
Oh my lord. Our cat just jumped on my soundboard and all heck broke loose.
Wow.
All heck broke loose.
He opened the door.
He literally just caused the show to explode.
I've never heard anything like that. Like every sound effect.
He stepped on my board. Messed up all my levels. Thank you, Kat. Appreciate that.
Oh, Thor. All right. He doesn't know. Doesn't. Okay.
That's okay. Hey, did you also know that Bruce Broughton also did the music for Spaceship Earth in 2008 to present?
No, but now I do.
Can't wait. Can't wait to have, I should call Bruce Broughton to just come on the show and talk about Disney music, attraction music.
That'd be fun.
That would be fun. Absolutely. Well, anyway, what else can we say about this show? It's great. You should write
it. At least they got rid of the whole Epcot for the millennial celebration, the 2000 that they had for years up on top of it.
Yeah.
I'm so glad they finally got rid of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so here we are now.
Park changing.
We're changing to Animal Kingdom. And here we have Kilimanjaro Safaris in Africa at Animal Kingdom. It opened April 22nd of 1998 and is a huge, huge ride. Takes you out through the savannah of East Africa. And back in the day, you used to stop poachers. You don't do that anymore. You don't do the whole Simba one. Yeah, Simba One does not stop poachers anymore. But it is a very, very cool attraction. You get to see tons and tons of different animals in the ride itself.
And at night, there's different animals in there than there is during the day.
Yes. It's a really cool photo safari vehicle in the Harambe Wildlife Reserve in Harambe, East Africa, traveling through the largest open exhibit. The driver points out all kinds of different animals you can see on there, various animal species from Africa. You can have them sometimes come right up to the vehicle a lot of times. But for the most part, all the other dangerous animals are disguised around their little areas with disguised fences and boundaries to ensure their safety. So,
Animal fact. Do you want to know how you can tell the difference between an emu and an ostrich?
Okay.
A ostrich keeps its head up. And an emu keeps its head even with its body or below.
Interesting.
There you go.
So what is it exactly do the people down the street have?
I have to check, but I'm pretty sure I remember that its neck is up, which would mean it would be an ostrich.
So strange.
Hey, but the zebra's gone. We used to have a zebra nearby.
That's true. Some of the animals in this story, the attraction, is the African bush elephant, the bongo, the cheetah, the ostrich, the common warthog. You might be offended by just calling it the common warthog. Lion, hippopotamuses, zebras, Nile crocodile, okapi, the springbok, the waterbuck, the white rhinoceros.
And the lion. Rawr, the lion. As our kids say.
The black crowned crane. Now, there's a bunch of different, the blue wildebeest is in there. But there's
flamingos.
Exactly. Originally, the ride had a scripted portion where the safari truck called Simba One would be contacted by habitat warden and scientists to hunt down poachers that had captured a mother elephant and her child, Big Red and Little Red, respectively. The poachers would have been captured at the end by gunpoint by another cast member acting as a warden. The element of the attraction was eventually eliminated and replaced with scaring off the poachers after pursuit. So there you go. During cast previews, Disney's Animal Kingdom, there was a dark ending in which a safari vehicle encountered a slaughtered corpse of Big Red.
What?
She was seen bloody and on the ground and her tusks were sawed off, symbolizing poachers got to her and the tour group was too late to save the mother elephant. Even though it was only animatronic, the scene proved too shocking to families and children. Many complaints were filed. So before the grand opening of the ride, Disney removed the simulated corpse, thus changing the attraction for that of a more happier ending. Did you know this?
No, I did not. Can you imagine how traumatized small children would be seeing that? I would have been one of those kids that was really upset if that had been the ending.
Oh my gosh. We could go on about that ride. Let's move on to this one. We're going to hit the Disco Yeti now on Expedition Everest, Kristen. This ride opened January 26th of 2006 and had cost approximately $100 million to make.
I remember that's the year that they opened up four attractions. They opened up a new one at each park.
Absolutely.
And your ticket had the picture of one of those four attractions. Mm-hmm. We still have our tickets somewhere from that year.
There you go. In ceremonies, when it opened, it was led by Disney CEO Bob Iger and theme park chairman Jay Rizzullo. Wow. It had been the tallest attraction in Walt Disney World, beating the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror by 6 inches. Disney keeps all of its attraction buildings over 200 feet because of aviation laws, requiring the structures of the height to have a blinking light for low-lying aircraft. So,
you mean below?
What?
Below that.
Yeah, below 200 feet. Yeah. Yes, below 2,000. Of course, yeah.
Yeah, you'd hate to have a plane fly into it.
Absolutely. The riders board the roller coaster and begin a speedy route to the Himalayas to the base of Mount Everest. The train departs a station, climbs through a small lift, then a drop, and then you run into the Yeti, which was very awesome. When we initially rode this ride, it was working back in the day when we rode it the first time together. And now the Yeti's broken.
It also used to have a much shorter stop when you got to the top before it went backwards.
Yes, the Yeti, the largest and most complex audio animatronic figure ever built by Walt Disney Imagineering, stands at 25 feet and its skin measures 1,000 square feet. It's held in place by 1,000 snaps and 250 zippers. It's a lot of skin.
That's a lot of zippers.
It's a lot of zippers. The Yeti's roar is provided by voice actor Fred Tatasciore, famous for his work as the Incredible Hulk in animated shows and films. I like Fred. Good dude. And of course, Joe Rohde has said the Imagineer in charge of building the attraction at Animal Kingdom was asked about the Yeti and said, you have to understand it's a giant complicated machine sitting on top of like a 46 foot wall tower in the middle of a finished building. So it's really hard to fix, but we're working on it and we'll continue to work on it. We have several things. None of them quite get to the key, but I can say that Joe Rohde has retired and he has not been able to finish the repairs. He said he would, but he retired. Actually, he's kind of forced out, I'm sure. Let's move on. A couple more left. Kali River Rapids. Kali River Rapids, originally named Tiger Rapids Run, is a rapid attraction you will get wet in Walt Disney World Resort in the Asia area.
I suggest bringing a poncho.
Yes, it opened March 18th of 1999. You will get wet for sure. There's no doubt about that. The queue winds through temples and shops, passing ancient decaying statues and shrines, overgrown ruins, and the rafting offices for the Kali River Rapid Expedition. And of course, in keeping with a theme against illegal logging, chainsaws can be heard in the forest near queue. Inside the rafting offices, visitors pass a television screen in which the proprietor of Kali River Rapids Expeditions explained their company's mission to show the visitors the natural beauty of the area, and demonstrate that there are non-destructive ways to bring revenue to their village. Just before reaching the loading area, a radio transmission warns that illegal loggers have moved dangerously close to the river. Those are probably the same as those illegal poachers. Just saying.
Gosh, those illegal people.
I know, right? Yeah, I really, this is a great attraction if you really, really want to get wet, because you will get wet.
Yeah, if you don't have plans like that, you have to sit down at a restaurant for dinner later. Mm-hmm. It's definitely one that on a hot day is well worth getting soaked for.
Yes, that's right. There are 20 boats. Riders are arranged one across in 12 rows for a total of 12 riders per boat. There you go.
Yep.
It's a great, great attraction, but you will get wet and you will probably get soaked. Last but not least, we have the final attraction, not tied to any intellectual property, movie or TV that Disney has.
The only attraction at Disney's Hollywood Studios.
That doesn't have a tie-in.
Yes.
That's right. It is the Rock and Roller Coaster starring Aerosmith. Now, what do you love about this attraction?
I like the takeoff. 0 to 60 in 2.8 seconds or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. And there you go. It's pretty cool. The pre-show.
Well, then it's got great music.
Of course. It's G-Force Records featuring Aerosmith. And you get to see them, of course, recording their album before you go off into see Aerosmith live in a stretch limousine. This stretch limousine goes all throughout the LA. And then, of course, you run into Aerosmith as they're playing their final song at the Forum. That really kind of doesn't make sense, but there you go. It's six cars. Riders are arranged two across and two rows for a total of 24 riders per train. And once again, amazing 0 to 57 miles an hour in less than 2.6 seconds. That's fast.
I was close. I said 2.8.
Very, very good, Kristen. You're very close. And tons of awesome Aerosmith songs. I love the fact that you can go through the recording studio. You can see Aerosmith in there. All the instruments and drums and everything in that studio is just like a recording room that I've recorded in before. All those instruments actually work.
So I do have a question.
Yep.
Is that guitar body... Does Fender have a trademark to it?
Nope. It's generic.
And okay. So that's why it is not the Les Paul that is played by Joe Perry. Yeah.
Yeah. It's if they would have asked Gibson, I'm sure they would have been able to make that a Les Paul. We would have given them the rights to use it. Because once again, I mean, there's Les Pauls in there and there are Les Pauls mm-hmm. in the pre-show, you know, and Gibson has a longstanding relationship with Disney, as you
it's
know.
It's either that or they just overlooked that bit.
Perhaps, but you know, the Imagineers, they build whatever. But we love the Rock and Roller Coaster. It's great. It's awesome. And once again, that was a huge, huge list. We could have definitely spent a lot of time talking about the various ins and outs and special things for each one of those attractions. But the bottom line is that we only have an hour, folks. That's what we're dealing with here. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. You can follow me, Al John Go, on Instagram. You can also check out my show, The Other Show, with me and Dave Bossert, called Skull Rock Podcast. And this week, we talked to Don Hahn about the Ron Miller era of Disney when he was CEO. It's not a whole lot of people know his contributions to the Walt Disney Company in the almost 10 years that he was the CEO of the Walt Disney Company. So we'll talk about that with Don Hahn. And it's always great to have Don on the show once again. Skull Rock Podcast, everywhere you find podcasts. And Kristen, you're everywhere as well with Dining at Disney. Why don't you tell everybody where people can find you?
You can find me at diningatdisney.com. Also on your favorite podcasting platform, you can find the Dining at Disney podcast. Also on your favorite social media platforms. And if you're looking for travel information, you're looking to go to a theme park or take a cruise, you can contact me at themeparksandcruises@gmail.com.
There you have it. An awesome show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to like, share, and subscribe. Visit our show archive. Be a show producer like Lindsay. Thank you so much for keeping the Disney list and making sure that you're supporting the show. We do appreciate it. Give us those 5-star reviews on those digital platforms as well. We do appreciate it. And until next time, I'm Al John.
And I'm Kristen.
And we'll see you real soon.
The information and opinions expressed in this podcast are for entertainment and informational purposes. All other trademarks mentioned are the property of their respective owners.
Skull Rock Podcast, talking all things Disney, with your hosts, Al John Go and Dave Bossert.
Do you just love to learn more about the magic that embodies animated films, theme park attractions, and more? The all-encompassing universe created and produced by the genius of Walt Disney has spanned nearly 100 years and counting.
From his earliest film endeavors with the Laugh-O-Gram cartoons and the Alice comedies, to the creation of Mickey Mouse, to the first animated feature film, Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, and then dreaming up Disneyland, Walt Disney continuously raised the creative bar, and today his company has carried on that tradition as a global entertainment juggernaut. I'm Dave Bossert, artist, filmmaker, and author.
And I'm Al Jongo, musician, podcaster, and radio guy. Every week, Dave and I will explore the entertainment galaxy that is Disney with insightful conversation, stories, and special guests talking all things Disney.
Listen to never-before-heard stories and behind-the-scenes moments from some of your favorite Disney films, theme park attractions, performances, books, music, and so much more from knowledgeable, insightful, and thought-provoking hosts and guests. Hear the latest news about Disney past, present, and future.
Skull Rock Podcast is your go-to source for the magic we all love. Skull Rock Podcast. Visit skullrockpodcast.com.
I'm Kristen Hetzel, co-host of Dining at Disney podcast. Every week, I chat about dining at Disneyland and Walt Disney World Resort and Disney Cruise Line with my fellow foodie, Bubba. We also feature restaurants and food reviews, information to help you plan your dining, Disney food news, recipes, and a monthly panel discussion. Visit diningatdisney.com and subscribe to Dining at Disney podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcast, iHeartRadio, or your favorite podcast platform. Dining at Disney podcast, the happiest plate on earth.